guy. That's the master. Welcome back to Give Me Some Truth. We have a guest in the office. It's very exciting for us. We love when we have guests. And a longtime friend, not even colleague, I'm going to say friend.
We're friends. Thank you.
Yeah. This is Megan Jarabic from Von Breezen Law Firm. I was going to say for Madison, which the firm is, but it's all over Wisconsin.
That's right. You guys have 220 lawyers or something now.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're here.
When you started, how many did they have?
I want to say it wasn't too much bigger or smaller, actually.
There's
kind of ebb and flow of different attorneys. Wow. But we have way more offices than we had then. We used to really be primarily Milwaukee office, Madison office.
Got it.
And now we're up in Eau Claire, Green Bay, Fox Valley. We have an office in Chicago. So
wow.
We've expanded our footprint.
Yeah, yeah.
And if the numbers haven't, I think the numbers are about the same.
Fantastic. And you've been there how long?
I have been there 13 years.
13 years. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Time flies.
Feels like you just blinked and
it does.
A decade went by.
Yeah. I would like to think I'm a lot younger than I probably am now officially. So yeah, it does.
Not 29 anymore?
No, I know. I'm just holding strong right below 30.
and you're busy.
Yeah, yeah, we're really busy. It's been interesting couple of years in what has been busy and what has kind of risen to the top at different times. But yeah, overall we've been really busy.
Awesome.
It's been great.
Well, a lot of folks know you from your estate planning work, which is second to none. Awesome. We have a ton of our clients. We appreciate it. But today we're talking about a sports topic. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
NIL. And you know a lot about this.
I do. Yeah. So during COVID, actually, I started a sports law department at Von Breezen. And the timing of starting that really didn't have to do with any of the shift in the NIL rules. It just was happenstance that was going on at the same time as we were launching our sports law department, because we work with athletes and coaches and executives on their kind of off the field or off the court work.
Yep.
So we're doing business and personal planning for them, estate planning, setting up companies, buying real estate, that kind of stuff. And so that was all going on at the same, and we were launching that department right when the rules on what college athletes or student athletes could do in this space was changing. And you certainly can't have a sports law department and not be talking about NIL right now. And so it was kind of great timing for us to be doing that. And I do a lot of speaking on a lot of different topics. And so NIL became the topic of choice when people asked me to come and talk. Everybody is interested in it.
It's more exciting than estate and trust law, apparently. Yeah.
When they have an option of what to have me talk
that
about
is
it.
Very
you know,
shocking.
This rises to the top.
All right. So those that don't know, NIL stands for name, image, and likeness. And essentially, I'm going to give the absolute layman's version of layman's version, but in 2021, the Supreme Court of the United States passed a law that more or less said that college students can receive income.
Yeah. So what?
Because they couldn't before, right?
Right.
The NCAA said, sorry, you're not allowed to, quote, pay players.
Exactly. Right. So what name, image, and likeness, it refers to kind of three components of a person's right to publicity. And we all have that right.
Yep.
Not just athletes, not artists, anybody has a right to publicity. And those, the name, image, likeness is kind of the shorthand for these components of that right. And traditionally, the NCAA had restricted an athlete's right to make money or profit from their name, image, and likeness on the theory that that was necessary to preserve the integrity of college athletics and to delineate between professional athletes and amateur or college athletes. And right. So that was the theory of their regulation of this for a long, long time. And over time, and especially as kind of different media started to evolve and come out, video games were kind of the first proponent of it or the first thing that propelled this to a discussion. But all kinds of different media, athletes started to challenge these rules and say an artist in college can make money on their name, image, and likeness. A regular student can make money on their name, image, and likeness. Like, why can't we?
Yeah.
And so they started to push back against this regulation as unlawful or unconstitutional. And so there were various kind of lawsuits over the years that took this up. Many of them settled out. And then really kind of the end of 2019, California became the first state to pass a law, a state law.
A state law, right.
That said that student athletes that went to colleges and universities in their state could make money on their name, image, and likeness.
Which really was the first domino to fall.
Major domino to fall, because then, of course, you get into competitiveness.
Right.
Right? Because now if people going to California can do it, that gives them an advantage for something they can offer to their student athletes that other universities and colleges can't offer. So states started across the country to propose and to pass legislation on a statewide level to give athletes in their states this right. No effect on the NCAA rules. It was sort of like, we're going to pass it at the state level and see what happens.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, there was almost fear at that time that if nothing was done at the federal level, there was almost a fear that the universities were going to be able to kind of circumvent the NCAA in other things and almost create their own kind of non-NCAA like leagues. Is that fair to say?
Right. As once you get traction creating state legislation on anything, right, then it's like everybody fears that this is the beginning of a slippery slope of states kind of entering into this space and trying to make their state more competitive in collegiate athletics. And so you're right, that was the fear. The other fear was that just straight NIL laws from state to state were different. Each state was taking it up on their own. They were drafting it themselves. They had different parameters throughout the country. And so in these laws that were passed were set to take effect in July of 2021. And that was at the same time that the NCAA versus Alston case was going up to the Supreme Court. So it was kind of this, like, really storm of different circumstances that was leading to a lot of uncertainty. And so in June of 2021, a month before the state laws were going to go into effect kind of across the country in this patchwork quilt kind of manner, the Supreme Court came out with their decision in Alston, which you're referencing. And in that case, the Supreme Court, it was a 9-0 decision, which is pretty rare.
Crazy.
And a pretty big blow to, you know, this system. That case did not address name, image, and likeness specifically. That case was about the NCAA's restriction on education-related compensation.
Sure.
So they were setting a cap for what student athletes could, you know, have or receive for education-related expenses. And that was what was stricken down by the Supreme Court as unlawful and unconstitutional. Anti-monopoly statutes is what they're really referencing. So the issue with that was once it came down and because it was a 9-0, the language in the Supreme Court ruling was basically calling into question all of the ways that the NCAA restricts compensation for these athletes. And so it became really clear that despite this being about education-related expenses, that
they were sending a message.
They were sending a message, and there was going to be a really no way to defend these other things. Yep. And so the NCAA came out with its own revised policy on name, image, and likeness.
So do you think that the Supreme Court took the case because they knew of what was going on at the state level and almost weigh in on this, even though maybe they didn't want to?
I mean, I think it was a long time coming, to be honest. Right. I think there were so many cases that were addressing this, and it was getting so much momentum. And then, of course, seeing the state legislation coming makes a big difference. And so I think it's an area that people wanted some higher power to weigh in on, right?
Clarity, clarification, right.
And so when this came out, then the NCAA comes out and they revise their policy and they say, we are going to change our rules now to allow students to make money on their name, image, and likeness.
Sure.
And here are the revised parameters on what we're going to allow. And so now what's interesting about that is that when the NCAA revised this policy, that didn't stop the state laws from taking effect.
Sure.
Right? And so then now we have the NCAA pulling back their policy and revising it. We have states that all have different state laws that now the states who had passed state laws thought they were going to get this advantage and this jump.
Sure.
Now they have state laws that differ from what the NCAA policy ended up allowing. And so now some of the states that were on like the front cutting edge are trying to repeal or revise their rules, their state laws, because the NCAA was more permissive in certain ways than their state law had been or whatever. So it just created chaos.
Wow.
And a unique and wonderful opportunity for student athletes. But just as far as what and how that works, just totally kind of a mishmash of things.
So we're 2 years into this, right? Mm-hmm. What's worked, what hasn't worked?
What you're seeing now is the NCAA increasingly allowing institutional involvement in NIL. And so that is something that when they first came out, it was a students can do this, but colleges and universities, you got to be hands off.
Sure.
Right? And that created a lot of difficulty because they would literally be able to tell their students what NIL was.
Yep.
And then when a student would raise their hand and say, okay, where do I go to get a deal? They'd say, can't tell you.
Sure.
Where do I go to get legal help? Can't tell you. Where do I go to get accounting help? Can't tell you. Right? Like that's where it kind of started. And it quickly morphed into, we can't leave these student athletes without any direction or support.
Right.
We're the ones as an institution that are theoretically looking out for them and trying to help them and work in their best interests. You have to provide us a way to help. And so that's really what's evolved since this started, is we're moving closer and closer to institutional involvement to help the student athletes navigate what this looks like and what this is. I would say the way that the deals are coming together, there was a big jump in large NIL deals to make a splash, to get good marketing, to help in ways to attract, I won't say help recruit because that's a no-no word in that, but to help attract students and athletes to certain universities or colleges, you know, and I think that splash was really immediate and really loud, and a lot of people think that that's all that NIL is, right? It's just a recruiting mechanism. Yep. It's just a way to stay competitive, and I think there's definitely recruiting benefits and ways to, you know, help give the environment that a student athlete is now looking for using this. But there's also a lot of other NIL deals that are really helping, and student athletes that are here that wouldn't have changed their college based on that. You know, so I think it's both. And I think most people think it's only one kind of deal or package, you know, the big splashy Gatorade campaign that makes millions and
Well, and you see it around your local communities, right? You're seeing these athletes from football teams, basketball teams, swim teams, whatever it might be, advertising for local businesses, local interests, local operations. I mean, it's pretty interesting to see how it's, you know, to your point, it's not just the national top five athletes going with the top five companies. It's very local, which is interesting as well.
And that's another interesting thing. At the beginning, everybody was talking in like in legal seminars and other things. They were saying it's going to be the top 1-2% of athletes.
Sure.
And it's not going to affect anybody else. Which is crazy statement if you think about how we know sports marketing works.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
That, to me, was like a very athlete-focused comment, you know, or a sports comment. But if you know branding and marketing, you know there's a lot of different reasons a company would pick one athlete over another or would be interested in somebody that maybe isn't the top 1-2% performing athletes, but they have a good story. They're from your community. They're dynamic. They have a good social media following. They're, you know, they've got interests that align or causes that align. There's tons of different reasons that companies pick athletes to partner with. And some of them have to do with their performance on the field. And some of them just have to do with these other kind of intangible or sometimes even tangible things that an athlete can bring to their marketing campaign. And so that's been another big difference from what I think people anticipated, is that there's really athletes at every level taking advantage of this opportunity to build and grow and be part of this.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great because, I mean, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room always was, you know, the universities are making money. They're profiting on these students. But the student that wasn't able to get anything as a result. That there was always seemed to be a just seemed unfair.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the narrative.
It's pretty
for
cool
sure,
that they're able to like get something back for. And I understand they're getting free education. I mean, there's a lot to that. However, you know, to the extent that they should be able to benefit financially from what they do, is I think it's good overall. Obviously, the devil's in the details, but I think for the most part, it's good overall. Where does it go in 5 years?
Yeah, I think you'll continue to see institutional involvement increase, because the hardest part of the way it was set up is like, well, if we can't help, who helps?
Yeah.
Right? There is not an infrastructure here. There's not a bunch of professionals that have been kind of waiting in the wings to do this. This is like brand new, uncharted territory. Companies don't know how to use it. They don't know what they can and can't do. So how does that come together? Mm-hmm. Athletes have never been able to do this, so there's not educational resources and other things in place at the beginning. And so it really, there's not checks and balances on the system, right? They can have sports marketing agents. What's the going rate? How much does that agent get paid?
Right.
How do you keep the student athlete from getting taken advantage of and signing things that that go beyond what they should, or that, you know, you just think in my mind, you think about artists or recording artists or other things that, like, so many stories out there about signing that deal they wish they wouldn't have signed because it was overbroad and it took too much and they paid this huge commission. All those things now apply to these student athletes too. And so without kind of this arms around approach to how we're going to help everybody navigate this, it there's a lot of holes.
Yeah. And no precedent for it. I mean, there's no, like, how did we used to do this and how do we do it now?
And from an institutional standpoint, you want to be careful because you don't want to ruin anybody's eligibility. You don't want to step into the gray too far, you know. But from an athlete perspective, you want to take advantage of what opportunities you have. You need help. Somebody's got to do it. So I think you'll see more institutional involvement. I think you'll see businesses starting to understand the kind of pros and challenges of using people of this age, people who are not, you know, marketing trained professionals, you know. When you use an athlete and associate them with your brand, what education do you need to do from a company standpoint to make that really a mutually beneficial relationship? What do you have to do to protect the company? What do you need to do to help the athlete do the best job they can do and put their best foot forward? So I think you're going to see an industry grow around this specific area that involves a whole lot of different people.
Do you think that there are future court rulings that will come down to clarify this? Or do you think that this is kind of now in the hands of the universities and the athletes to kind of figure out, chart the course?
Yeah, I think it depends a little bit on where the NCAA goes. If they continue kind of voluntarily to expand what they can do and what institutions can do, maybe there's not as much of a need.
Sure.
You know, I think that if you hit a point where there needs to be more oversight, that's where I think you could see more legislation on the maybe even federal level, is to say, okay, we now need some guardrails that the NCAA can't put on because of how this court decision came down. We need some parameters to make sure everybody can work in the right way and to level the playing field, if you will.
Is clarity the biggest pitfall right now?
Yeah. And because you're in this space that now is used to be very black and white, to use simple terms,
painfully black and white,
right? And that was the pressure point, right? Yeah. You just couldn't do it or whatever, right? And now there's just kind of these shades of gray that it's like, how do we know where to sit in this space and feel comfortable institutionally? How does a student athlete know what kind of a path they want to participate in, right? Because they're seeing the same media that we're seeing.
Right.
They're seeing the splash of the big deals. A lot of times they're coming in with some different ideas about what NIL deals might look like. And we still, you know, I advise both athletes and companies. We still get athletes that are like, well, so I just get my check, right? Like, I don't, and you're like, no, you have to actually do something, you know, like, that's kind of part of this deal, but that's not what is reported, right?
Right.
It's like so-and-so makes $1 million in NIL deals.
Sure.
They don't say in the media that's for X amount of TV commercials or this or that, right? Because that's not what the news story is about, but it's shaping the way that people think these deals come together.
Sure.
You know, when you have to tell them, you actually have to show up. You got to sign the balls, or you've got to, you know, do the photo shoot or do the social media posts. Like, something has to happen here for that check. It's funny that athletes are like, oh, right. And then you get a company that says the same thing. You know, how do we make this work? What's the going rate? Well, going rate's being set right now.
Right.
You know,
right.
This is all being worked out right now.
Wow. I mean, what is the kind of one, maybe not one, but I mean, the piece of advice that you would give to a 18-year-old incoming athlete to a university that's somewhat highly recruited or highly touted? I mean, what, other than just kind of, you know, buyer beware kind of thing, I mean, what is the guiding principle that you would give that person?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I'm sure if people have heard me talk about it before, I say the same thing. Like, we need to really be looking at these athletes, and they need to be looking at themselves like startup companies.
Sure.
Like, they need all the things that an entrepreneur needs.
Yeah.
They need to understand what is important to them? What is their brand? What kind of companies do they want to align with?
Yeah.
They need to understand personal responsibility and what does this contract require of me and what happens if I don't do it.
Right.
They need help understanding what they have to report for taxes and what the terms of the contract mean legally. And in my mind, it's very easy to think about it if you equate it to like a startup incubator.
Yeah.
You know, like what kind of information do we need to get the student athletes to understand how to navigate this space?
Is it typical for the athlete to set up an LLC?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah. If they're going to do more than one deal, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's what we would advise them to do, you know, is to set up an entity like that. And to it makes things a lot easier and protects from risks in lots of ways. The hard thing right now is that you have to work with advisors to get that stuff done.
Yeah.
And a certain level of NIL deal justifies that in a student athlete's mind.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
And a certain level doesn't justify it. But they're actually the same contractual requirements and tax requirements. And so it's tricky, and it's not that similar from someone starting their own company who thinks, well, I'm tight on money right now. I'm going to do these things myself. I'm going to set up my own LLC. I'm going to do my own things. I don't need anybody else to do this. And then they get to a certain point where they go, ooh, you know, maybe I should have seen that as an investment in what I needed to do to get it set up. Well, now move that to being 18, 19, 20. You know, it's a little bit harder to impress the importance of those things early.
Yeah.
Because they haven't learned it. And the thing that is interesting to me is it used to be this stuff all happened for professional athletes, right? That was the first time they could do this.
Right.
Well, most professional athletes went to a D1 school and played at some level for some amount of time. And so there was some kind of base level of education, if you will.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And now we're coming out of high schools. And is there the same base level of education on how contracts work or things that gets given to high schoolers in the same way that you would hope once you get into college, you're an adult, you can sign things, you kind of understand maybe a little bit more.
Well, and like we said earlier, there's a precedence for it, right? The structure's already been built at the, you know, once you become pro level, not that it's without flaw, obviously, but it's not built for the NIL deal the way it's built, like a professional employment contract in the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever it might be.
Well, and those athletes they go into that space working with professionals.
Sure.
Right. They have some professional that's helping them, an agent, and a wealth advisor, a lawyer, an accountant, maybe all four. Right. And so now we're backing that way up to 18-year-olds. It's a totally different dynamic and space.
And not knowing where they are as a freshman versus where they might be as a senior. Somebody might come in and be a walk-on, and by the time they're a senior, they're a starter, and they're, you know, they all of a sudden have this you know, demand that they didn't even have 2 years ago or didn't think they would have.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it is an interesting space. I think the advice is the more education that people can seek in understanding how to navigate, you know, real business professional relationships, and then being true to who they are, understanding who their brand is early.
Yeah.
That's, again, you know, student athletes, when we were in college, they didn't have the same eyes on them as they do now.
Right.
And a misstep in college, doing things that college people do, wouldn't probably affect them monetarily.
Yeah.
And now, if you have NIL deals and you're a brand ambassador for someone, you have to think about kind of what effect that might have on your behavior in public or other things, where it just is a different space. And so understanding that up front to protect, because they have a brand to protect now.
And what that contract might say.
Yeah. Yeah. Morals clauses, other things. It's it's an interesting thing on behalf of the companies to say, how worried about this are you? Realize who you're contracting with.
I was just going to say, so as we wrap up here, give one piece of advice for the companies, right?
Yeah.
So if you're a business owner, if you're somebody that runs a marketing department or whatever it might be, and you say, "Ooh, this is interesting. Maybe I want to get, you know, a local athlete that, you know, is involved with my company." I mean, what should they be looking at by way of you know, be careful of this, or make sure you do that?
Yeah, good question. So there's a couple of things. Right now, there are a few prohibited terms in the world of NIL. There are certain things you cannot do in an NIL contract without affecting the student's eligibility. You have to have quid pro quo. I can never say that. I have to slow real down.
Yeah, you can. You took your time on that.
It really takes me a lot to say that. You have to do something.
Which is interesting, because typically that's seen as a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
From the standpoint of conflict of interest, or, you know, you shouldn't, you know,
like you have to do something. If you're going to pay them, you have to be getting something back for that.
Got it.
Either access to the athlete, access to their name, photo, something, right?
Sure.
You cannot tie the compensation to their participation in athletics or to certain achievements.
Performance, right? Things like that.
Which is very, very different than professional.
Yeah.
In professional endorsement deals, there's all kinds of escalators for hitting certain things, making MVP, making a certain level of playoffs. You can't do that in college athletics at this
Interesting.
Point. You can't tie it to going to a certain university or school. Mm-hmm. So you cannot, you would think, right, I'm going to contract with him as long as he is a UW football athlete. Like in your mind, it's like, yeah, that's why I'm contracting with them. Right. I'm going to put it in there. You cannot put it in there.
Interesting.
And then you cannot, the institution can't participate in the payment at this point. So there are things a business owner needs to understand about what can and can't be in the contract. Not a lot of things, but some pretty important things. And then I would say from the business side of things to understand, you know, what protections do you want around the content? If you're hiring an athlete to do a television commercial that you're scripting, you're picking out their outfit, you're there when it gets filmed, you can edit it, maybe you're not as concerned, right? But if you're hiring an athlete to do any sort of like social media content or things that are going on and happening without your ability to edit or review what's happening, you have to think about how are we going to give them the tools to do this well, and how are we going to define to them, like, what is in line with our company? What isn't?
Yeah.
You know, who are our competitors? What do we want you to kind of say? What should you not say?
Yeah.
So from a branding perspective, I think a lot of companies are using their internal marketing folks to just pick up a contract and do it, and maybe not thinking about, you know, this is slightly different than what we're doing with other people.
Well, because that athlete doesn't know the ins and outs or the regulatory environment with which that business operates.
Right.
And so that athlete could potentially step on a landmine, not realize it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you've got a big problem on your hand.
Right. Or simple things like they might wear a branded t-shirt when they're shooting at social media, you know, or use a song. I mean, there are a lot of examples even here in town about people coming out early and using songs they hadn't licensed, or having friends in the background, or wearing apparel that they can't wear, you know, so just simple things where nobody's trying to do anything wrong, but it's just an education piece for that. And so I would say companies that are doing things that are not real-time live where they can control the messaging have to step back and think about, how am I going to communicate the parameters?
Yeah.
How am I going to educate and put this athlete in the best position possible to do right by what we're trying to do?
Super fascinating. It always amazes me when we have situations like this where it literally is playing out in real time, the development of kind of the marketing space that is NIL. It's pretty amazing because you generally don't. I mean, generally the world now is everything so thought out and pre-formulated and been vetted by 18 different companies before, you know, it actually gets introduced to the public. And this is kind of just playing right away from the beginning with real money, real lives, real consequences. I mean, it's an interesting, kind of fascinating area to be in right now. I'm sure you're seeing a tremendous amount of change, almost on the daily, weekly, monthly basis, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing from our perspective is, like, we, you know, contract lawyers like myself or business lawyers, like, this isn't new space for the most part from a legal perspective.
Right.
Like, a contract is a contract. You have to know the NIL space. You have to know what's allowed and not. The terms, the parameters of what we're trying to do is not too new. The key, I think, really is that because a lot of the deals are smaller, every athlete's got a buddy or their dad's buddy or somebody's buddy who's the lawyer that's going to review it. And it's like, well, he's a divorce attorney, but I'm sure. I'm not sure if that's the right person to be reviewing your stuff for you. So a lot of it, too, is just getting access to the right professionals to be able to give the help, because it's a space right now where if your deal's not huge, you're kind of cutting corners on who's helping you out. And that can get, you know, a little dangerous. I think there'll be some examples that come out of not reporting on taxes.
Sure.
You know, some lessons that will play out in real time that I think will educate everybody on what to do and what to not do.
Well, we'll talk about that next time, because I'm sure we'll have you on again as time goes by to talk about this again. It's such an interesting topic, and being a college town that we operate in, and You know, we're so passionate about our teams. It's pretty cool to be able to see. It's cool to see these athletes kind of out there in the public and in on billboards, yeah. and you know, yeah. kind of do. It's interesting as that world has changed, because it was taboo for so long.
Yeah, they're so. Powerful marketers, especially in communities like ours, where they are our local celebrity. They are the people that the kids want to see and the families want to see.
Yeah.
It's a really powerful opportunity for them in towns like this. So it's cool to see, and I think it'll continue to grow in a way that everybody can access a lot more easily than they think they can.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. We hope you enjoyed it. It's our goal to try to bring out topics that maybe aren't purely market finance driven, but are interesting and for sure kind of on the headlines, because this one definitely is. So thanks so much.
You didn't stump me, so I'll come back.
Fantastic. All right, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again in another episode of Give Me Some Truth.
Walker Condon Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. The opinions expressed by the participants of this podcast are their own. Do not reflect the opinions of Walkner Condon Financial Advisors. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. The information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Viewers are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.
You gotta leave your money behind you. Raise your hand to the sky.